From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of November 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility that produces ethanol outside of Logansport, Indiana, should be along to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll check in on the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and I will ask him a bit about that drought in the southeast and its potential to spread into the Midwest over time. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. A couple of notes earlier in the week. Yesterday, in fact, the Farm Assets Conference took place in Normal. Tomorrow and Friday will air the soybean panel and the corn panel during this hour on some of these radio stations. You can already hear them, or pretty shortly hear them, if they're not already there, at willag.org, willag.org. Also, the markets are open on Friday to noon. However, because it's a holiday here on campus, we're going to take some time and spend that time with our family. So no ag programming during the day on Will Ag for Friday of this week. Now, let's talk a little bit about the marketplace. Joining us in studio today is Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming to campus today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, tell me about the move we had on Monday in the soybeans. How surprising was that? Can we see any follow-up?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting to see the situation that we're in. It's definitely a demand-led market. Supply-wise, we have more than adequate supply both in the U.S. and in the world. You know, we're talking almost a half a billion bushel carryout on soybeans, which is more than what we've seen for a long time. Now, granted, the USDA has basically overshot that estimate several years in a row, but they've been pretty aggressive on demand this year. So, you know, at this point, the dollar backing off just a hair has been, you know, good for the soybean market, but the corn market really hasn't followed that as much. So one thing that I've been pointing to quite a bit here recently is world vegetable prices and demand has been just extremely stout, and it's done nothing but help soybeans and the products.
Usually we would say an oil-led rally will collapse sometime fairly quickly. The vegetable oil rally, and you can help me out, I believe has been led by a short supply with the Malaysian palm oil?
Absolutely. Palm oil market has been kind of a catalyst to get this thing started. And so, you know, I think whenever you look at a record U.S. crop, you're talking about additional soybean acreage this next year. I guess I wouldn't see a whole lot of reason to get, you know, too tight-fisted with old beans. As far as new beans go, boy, a lot of us started selling beans lower than this by a dollar last year. And so, you know, selling a few beans in this neighborhood, or at least putting floors underneath the market, is probably a pretty smart thing to do.
Does it bother you at all? And you aren't aware of this, but on the Farm Assets Conference soybean panel, the three panelists, Ellen Dearden and Greg Johnson, Jerry Gulke, all said the same thing. So I've got four of you, and I think almost everybody's in that same boat, saying, go ahead, make 2017 sales. Are there too many of you on one side of this?
You could look at it that way. A lot of times people say if everybody's on one side of the boat, be looking to jump off the other. But, you know, the way I'm looking at it is at normal yields, and looking at what your insured production is going to be on soybeans, if you protect $10 or $10.15, $10.20 November 17 beans, I can assure you, you're not going to get hurt there, especially with where your input prices are for the 2017 crop year. And so that's what's important. Is it going to be too cheap or not? I don't know. But if I can make money on my farm, that's what's important to me.
I know Greg said, hey, sell 25% or 20%. Say that bucket's done, don't worry about it. Where do you want to be?
I'm perfectly fine with getting to half sold based on my APH bushels. I have no issue with that. Personally, on my farm, I'm there. I'm there through a variety of a little bit of new crop sales if you can get a good basis. I've got some hybrid contracts on, kind of a risk-reward type thing. We do a few bushels there. Different companies offer those, including ADM, Agrivisor, companies like that. And then I've just simply got floors under the rest. So, you know, I've got a fair amount of flexibility. If we would add $2 to this price due to a weather issue in South America or a drought, I'm not going to get burnt too bad because I simply have a floor under a fair amount of that 50%. But I'm all in on getting at least half your crop protected.
All on paper? Or do you have cash sales made?
Yeah, a combination. I've got probably around 10 to 15% cash sales. I don't like making a lot of cash sales 12 months out, but actually the basis hasn't been so bad for 12 months out. And so, you know, the bottom line for me, I want to retain as much flexibility as possible, but I don't have any problem with selling 980 beans at the same time, maybe 990 in some places.
What's the best thinking on the Malaysian palm oil and when that will begin to stop having an effect in the marketplace?
Oh, the best guess on that is nobody really knows, the bottom line. And for a producer, for a producer in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, wherever you're listening to this, the main thing we've got to think about is we can throw so much information at us sometimes that we get confused. And as a producer, I want to keep it as simple as what I possibly can. I always talk about profitability and break-even levels. And by all means, 10-15 is above 90% of the producers I work with's break-even levels.
Now let's switch crops, go to corn. RVO has announced today from US EPA, they said, hey, we're going to let you go full steam at what the law allows. So that's where we are. However, we're already there in terms of the grind, I think, or pretty darn close.
Right. The economics has pretty well been what's driving, you know, what's going on with ethanol usage and production. And I think, you know, as far as we're going this year, it sure looks like we're running ahead of schedule. It's been pretty impressive, the bushels of corn that we've ground through. So, you know, I think moving ahead, we've got some pretty exciting times for both ethanol and the biodiesel industry. I think that you're looking at a fair amount of usage. And moving ahead, I think that it's probably one of the more exciting demand parts of the equation.
And speaking of exciting demand parts, exports for corn have been really good this year.
Yeah, we're running way ahead of what we were last year, which we were kind of laggard last year as far as sales went. You know, course inspections haven't been phenomenal, but they never really are at the start because we mostly move soybeans at the start. So, you know, I think one good thing whenever you're looking at corn is we probably can count on these sales not falling off like we think that the soybeans will on the one hand. But the other hand, we got to remember we could have another billion bushels of production out of South America coming up this next year. And so, you know, if they do have good weather and a good crop, it certainly could eat away at us, especially looking at what the dollar's done in relation to the real here recently.
What do you think about new and old crop sales here?
I think with corn, the one thing I really want to encourage producers to do when we're looking at new crop is look at your input costs, because, you know, 386 was our spring insurance price last year. At 380 to 385 this year, we're significantly more profitable at the same types of yields due to the fact that our input costs are down. Dry fertilizer, a little bit of easing with seed. Bottom line, I've seen some producers $40 to $70 an acre lower in input costs for this year per acre. So, you know, that's something we want to keep a real close eye on. As far as old crop goes, bushels in the bin, you know, they're still carrying the market. I might look at locking in that carry once I get to a price level I'm okay with. Basis has worked in your favor. You know, I think that we got to continue to watch that. I always tell producers, treat your bushels in the bin the same way an elevator does. And the way an elevator typically makes their money is on basis and selling the carry in the market. And so I think that right now I want to stand pat, but a lot of producers are looking at it closer and closer with what the basis has already done. And so if we're going to do that, you know, I'd rather sell 22, 24 cents above the market and sell it out in the July and wait and see what the basis is going to do coming around the first of the year.
Trade seems pretty convinced that the acreage mix in the United States will change pretty dramatically next year, leaning far more heavily towards soybeans. Are you on that same side of the ledger?
You know, whenever you look at some of the rhetoric that's come out, you know, like CF Industries said, they were talking 6.5 million acre drop on corn acres. I don't think that's going to happen personally, but I do think that we're going to transition. You know, when you look at Illinois, you know, the guys at FarmDoc, great stuff that they put together, but 4 years in a row, bean returns beating corn returns. And you notice this past year, Illinois was the only major producing state that had no change in corn acres. Everyone else was up. And so are some of the other states. state's going to join the party? I believe so. And I think so many of us were so heavy corn for so long. And whenever you look at a year in which producers, it's right in their rearview mirror, had 70 bushel beans and sold them for $10 or even $9.50, that's a pretty salty income compared to $200, $220 on corn and selling it for $340 or $350. And so by all means, I think that we're going to change the acreage mix. Right now, I'm probably around 90.5 on corn, and I'm probably 88.5, 89 on soybeans. So I think corn plantings to bean plantings are going to be as close as they've been in a long time.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much.
Yep, appreciate it.
You have a good holiday.
Yeah, you too.
Hey, that's Matt Bennett. He is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. I'll take a moment now to thank all the folks that were involved in the great success that was the Farm Assets Conference in Normal yesterday, starting with the staff here at WILL, Charlie Smith and Heather Miller, Mike Thomas and Mike Bowman, all involved, along with Don DeBeard, and then the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Farm Credit and Syngenta, along with TIA Center for Farmland Research here on campus, for stepping up in a big way to sponsor the program. For everybody that came, more than 200 in the room. You know, I was worried about that, and frankly, I didn't need to be so terribly worried, but I really want them to be great successes, and yesterday's program was. If you weren't able to be there, don't worry, I'll get some of it up on the website pretty shortly at willag.org, willag.org. You could tune in tomorrow if you'd like, because part of it, the soybean panel, will air during this hour tomorrow, and then on Friday, the corn panel, both from the Farm Assets Conference. That means they'll be up on the website, too, in the closing market report, and I'll probably just put the corn panel in Commodity Week. Now, if you're looking for something to do for the meeting season, boy, do I have a list for you. You can go in and see where I'll be. And there are a whole bunch of them to add yet over the winter time. That's in the calendar at willag.org. Already there, and you can find these too at the Farm Doc Daily website or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They'll take place Monday, December the 12th at the I Hotel here in Champaign. We'll be in DeKalb at Ferranda's Banquet Center on Tuesday the 13th, on Wednesday the 14th in Peoria at the Paradise Hotel and Casino. And on Thursday of that week, that's the 15th of December, we'll be in Springfield at the Crown Plaza. Mount Vernon will be the Holiday Inn, as usual, on the 16th. Those are all dates and places that you should be pretty familiar with if you've gone to these programs in the past. You can register on the Farm Doc Daily website. It's about $70, but it depends on whether you register early, online, by phone, or walk up. So $70, roughly speaking, but get yourself registered for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Who will be there? Well, everybody that you hear on this station, probably as it relates to agriculture, from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good, Jonathan Kappas, Scott Irwin, Dale Latz, Todd Keithy, Nick Paulson, and Gary Schnitke. So should be a great set of meetings. That's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They're in my calendar on willag.org, but to register, visit Farm Doc Daily and look over on the right-hand side of the page. You'll find a link to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. In today's agricultural news, just one real story. The U.S. government issued its final requirements for biofuel use for next year today, saying energy companies must boost the amount of renewable fuels in the nation's fuel supply, in a move that drew praise from the biodiesel sector after years of criticism. The EPA, in a statement, set the target for total renewable fuel use at 19.28 billion gallons for 2017. That includes 15 billion gallons for conventional biofuel, which is mainly corn-based ethanol, and 4.28 billion gallons for the advanced biofuels mandate, confirming figures that Reuters and others had previously reported. The final plan is up from 18.8 billion gallons the EPA proposed in May and marks a 6% increase from this year's 18.11 billion gallons. While many anticipated an increase for the conventional fuel target, that increase alongside the boost for advanced biofuels was more than many had expected. The EPA is required to set targets by the Renewable Fuel Standard, with annual mandates for how much ethanol and biodiesel need to be blended with gasoline and diesel. The program, signed into law by President George W. Bush, was designed to curb greenhouse gas emissions, promote energy independence, and boost rural economies. One quick commentary note that came to me from Jerry Goodell today. He writes, soybean oil is a big winner with this, with talk of some 750 million additional gallons of bean oil demand from the industry because of this year and next year's mandated biomass diesel of 2.1 billion gallons by 2018. Let's check in now on what's been happening with the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is with us. He's from the Anderson's Climbers facility where they produce ethanol outside of Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Stephen. Thanks for being with us.
You bet, Todd. How's it going?
Oh, really good on this day before Thanksgiving.
You quiet day.
Is it a quiet day there?
For the most part, rain's really slowed things down here. Movement pretty quiet, and just kind of a drizzly and kind of nasty looking day outside. Good day to be in, getting the turkey ready.
What'd you think of the RVO and the EPA announcement today?
We're to the point now where, moving forward. We get a lot of questions on impact directly towards the market. And what that may impact, and we're still struggling to stay in front of recent USDA numbers in terms of just straight crop production. To add that into the mix to us was probably a little bit more of a frenzy in terms of answering all questions. Still think moving forward, pretty positive impact, but definitely don't have a whole lot of opinion to cover on that, as we're still trying to stomach, trying to find $4 corn for folks.
And they're not likely to want to sell. How far back is your basis behind the market today at all?
Actually, if you consider where we're posted, we're five under the March, but that's versus the March. So obviously with where the spread's at, those that are still versus the D's, that's actually small overs today.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
You have a great
afternoon and a good holiday.
All right. Thanks.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I hope you're ready for a great Thanksgiving.
Indeed I am. Hey, thanks so much. Yesterday, I have a question for you that comes from the Farm Assets Conference. I have the feeling that producers are looking for a reason for risk to be built into the corn and soybean markets based off of the drought that is underway in the southeastern United States. How widely viewed should we consider this as a possibility?
Well, I think it's always important to pay attention to that. Ellen Taylor's always spoken highly that, droughts in the U.S. tend to occur from the southeast back to the northwest. That isn't always the case, but it does happen periodically. And what I look for is other supporting reasons for looking for dryness coming up. And to be honest with you, I don't have a lot at the moment that really supports that idea. However, what we expect to happen here as we go forward through the winter season is that we are going to see that dryness whittled down. In fact, you're going to see already next week some significant precipitation occurring in parts of that drought-ridden region. It may not be enough to turn things completely around. In fact, I would not necessarily expect that. However, as we go forward through the bulk of the winter, we will have a storm track that will run from eastern Texas to Ohio and Pennsylvania, and there'll be a lot of precipitation in that corridor. Areas to the east of that will probably continue to have less than usual precipitation, but because it's the winter season, there won't be much evaporation, and that area will see an improving trend to that dryness that's prevailing in the area. Now, come late winter, early spring, there will be a very subtle ridge of high pressure over that region, and dryness will be rekindled in the early weeks of spring. Now, I stop short of allowing that to go back northward across the U.S. without some kind of assistance from other weather patterns. Those other weather patterns would include something like a surprising persistence of La Niña, or perhaps something we call a Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which has to do with ocean temperatures off the west coast of North America. If we go into the negative phase of that phenomenon, which would mean colder than normal ocean water off the coast of California, we could see some further support for ridge building in the middle of the country. So I'm going to be looking at those two features as we go forward through the next several months. At the moment, I would play down a big widespread droughty pattern, but I do believe that a second season of dryness is in store for the southeast corner of the country.
The other option for concern or hope, depending on which side of the marketplace you might be on, is a problem in South America. Anything building there?
I don't see much at the moment. Now, Argentina's got some dryness that's evolving in from Buenos Aires to Cordoba. That is going to be with them for a good week, if not 10 days. Typically, La Nina events downplay precipitation in southeastern Argentina during the heart of the summer season. I think we'll see something like that. So there may be some issues in Argentina, but Brazil seems to have a much bigger pull on the marketplace, and I see mostly good conditions until January and February, and then it might rain too much for a little while across the center west and center south.
We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
All right. Well, have a great holiday.
You too. That, of course, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.